Time for Twig this week at Google. Stacey Higginbotham is here, so is Jeff Jarvis. We'll talk about the secret chip hidden in the new Pixel 2 phone, Google's AI writing its own code and teaching itself to play Go, and the train in Sweden named Trainy McTrainface. It's all next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 427, recorded Wednesday, October 18th, 2017. Wig Radar. This Week in Google is brought to you by Lighthouse. Lighthouse is the only security camera powered by the same technology that's in self-driving cars. Visit light.house/twit to sign up for 15% off Lighthouse when they ship and a chance to win a free Lighthouse plus a year of service. See site for contest rules. And by Video Blocks by Storyblocks. Uncage your creativity. Get all the stock video you need for only $149 a year. Visit videoblocks.com/twig to save on millions of studio quality clips from Video Blocks. And by Sonic, Twig's 10 gigabit fiber internet service provider. Join Sonic's internet revolution as they bring fast, affordable internet phone and TV to homes and businesses all over California. Visit sonic.com/twit to sign up for service and receive your first month free. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest Google-isms and Google-ishness. And there's lots of Google-ishness in Silicon Valley. Stacey Higginbotham is here from StaceyOnIoT.com and the IoT podcast. Hi, Stacey.
Hello,
I got a direct message from Om Malik today. I felt so proud, saying, I want to talk about cameras. It's a deal.
That fits.
Yeah, he's really into photography now, isn't he?
He's traveling the world taking pictures of it.
We mentioned that because Stacey for years was a giga ohm, as was her friend Matthew Ingram, who has a new job.
He does.
He's at the CJR, which is fantastic.
He is. He's their media and, well, social media reporter.
Columbia Journalism.
He's basically Matthew at CJR.
I love it. That's how he should be. Also here, Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, blogger at BuzzMachine.com, prolific author and public speaker who's traveling the world. Where are you going to be next week?
Back.
You're home. I know. It's amazing.
Next week, I'm in Chicago. That's why I can't be on the show, because I've got a. I'm advising the Christian Century magazine. I'm joining an advisory group for them, which is kind of weird. Then I'm going to Salt Lake City for a media thing.
Was it last century the Christian Century?
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to discuss with you, actually. Yes, that's kind of an interesting issue.
Yeah. Here we are in the new century now. Yeah, it's like last year was the American century. Last century was the American century. Now I don't know what. Pixel 2. Oh, I got it, by the way. I just wanted to show you.
Remember, you did?
No. Mine shipped.
No, you're shipped. Oh, I'm so jealous.
It's going to be here tomorrow.
You got the little one?
I got the little one, yes.
Yeah, I think the people who ordered the XL, I think, are not getting theirs for a while. I'm not getting mine.
On the 26th, mine ships up.
Oh. So you're soon. It's going to be available in Verizon stores tomorrow.
My Pixel book isn't shipping until November now.
Wow. Mm. That's when mine's coming. No, mine's because like Halloween, I think.
I canceled and then reordered you did, so yeah. I got out of line.
But I did get this. So? I got my case.
Oh. My case shipped, but it won't be here until forever. So how's yours look?
It looks great. I got one of those live cases. This is one with my picture on it. Actually, we did this.
Oh, yeah, that's the one we did on the show. How's it look?
It came out great. And at least, see, I'm looking. It looks like I'm trapped in the phone, and then the camera's right there. I think it looks good.
That's pretty good.
But see, at least now I know how big the phone's going to be. I could practice.
Is it squeezable?
Yeah.
You practice squeezing.
I can squeeze it.
That's the weirdest feature.
No, I think, you know what, as I read the reviews, because all the reviews got unembargoed yesterday. Yep. See, this is what it's going to look like. As I read, it's like a dummy, so I can see how big it is. Yeah, that's nice. That fits. That's good. I practice putting my finger on the reader. All the reviews said that the squeeze actually was, A, it gives you feedback, tactile feedback. It goes, bzzz, which is good. And it's surprisingly useful. And who was it? Was it Dieter Bohn, I think, writing in The Verge, who said, it's just very natural. I'm reaching into my pocket. I actually squeeze as I'm pulling it out, and the assistant's ready by the time I get it out. The big complaint right now, and we talked about this, I think, a couple of weeks ago, is the screen. It's the same screen as on the LG V30. LG, not known for its OLEDs. You know, Samsung is going to make Apple's OLEDs. They make the OLEDs for the Note, of course, and the S8. The LGs apparently have kind of a blotchy grayness when they're turned to low dimness. And we've started to see pictures of that come out now. So, however, everybody's raving about the camera. And Google did a funny thing. They sandbagged us a little bit. Turns out they didn't even mention this at the launch. There's a custom chip.
Oh, can I say I told you so?
You knew that?
You did.
We talked about it on the show.
Talked about it. You said
they must have done something custom here.
You're so smart.
And I can't believe they didn't announce it.
You're so smart.
She is indeed.
Wow. It's called the Pixel.
That's why I'm on the show.
Yes. It's called the Pixel Visual Core. It's Google's first custom system on a chip for consumer products. And its total job is camera stuff, accelerating the HDR Plus and so forth. And it's not on. When you get your new phone, it will be it's not activated until later, in a couple of months, probably what? With 8.1 as my guess of Oreo. Wow. So, well, in a way, that's cool, Jeff, because you'll get your phone. Pictures are going to look great. Every image I've seen so far looks fabulous. And at some point, it will suddenly get better even more or faster or something. Oof. It's an 8-core system on a chip with its own DDR4 RAM. This is crazy. So people...
Just for that one function.
Yeah. People, of course...
Watch, it's going to go on and your battery is going to go... Zoom.
Well, that's interesting. They call it an IPU, or Image Processing Unit.
Wasn't this going to be... There was processing for... What's their new photo thing called?
HDR Plus Portrait?
No. The software... Chat room. It was announced at I.O. And right now,
I don't know.
No. It's the photo processing. And some of that processing was going to happen locally.
Right. Oh, you mean for the little camera that they're selling, the clip?
No, that there was various.
TensorFlow?
No.
Oh, that's their AI.
A machine that goes bing.
Chat room. I'm not in the chat room yet. No. Chat room, help me.
I'm looking at the chat room. They don't know what you're talking about.
They don't know. There's you'll know it when you hear it. You'll say, oh, that's what Jeff meant.
It's not the AI processor.
It was photo functionality that they announced at I.O.
It doesn't matter what they name it. Yes, this must be it.
That was going to do, and part of what the magic it was going to do was locally processed. We couldn't figure out at the time. Well, how the hell are they going to do that? This is how they're going to do that.
Yeah.
And whatever that function is, whose name I cannot remember, one of the reviews I read said, oh, it's kind of now. That's probably why.
Pixel, obviously Pixel 2 required for this, and it will enable the Pixel Visual Core as a developer option in the preview of Oreo 8.1. So, if you're already, you know, as many of us got on the preview just to get Oreo 8 a little early on our Pixel phones, if you're still on that, stay on it, because 8.1 should come out pretty soon, probably roughly the same time you get your Pixel 2, except for Stacy, who's getting hers tomorrow. So jealous. Google also says the HDR Plus is only the first application to run on the Pixel Visual Core. In time, we should expect to see more imaging and machine learning enhancements added. I love it. Apple's done this too. Apple's new phones have a lot of extra capability, headroom. The Bionic 11 chip, A11 Bionic chip that they put in there, is way more powerful than you need. And we've been speculating that that's because there are new capabilities coming to these phones. They overbuilt them for AR or other stuff. This could easily be part of an AR engine. So that's good. I love it. That's kind of nice.
Google Lens.
Well, and
Google
so
Lens.
Here's,
Lens.
Sorry. Yes. I had it in my Eureka moment.
Yes. Lens.
That was lovely. I was going to say
like
the Stacey other
doing
thing.
It. Ooh. But ooh, it's just when my memory works, that's when it happens.
Ooh.
That's yeah. True. So TechCrunch said
exciting,
Google
Jeff.
Lens still has a long way to go. because that was going to do the localized processing of figuring out what the photo was, and the photo becomes the search query.
It's not the funny thing is the tricky part about all that is not the processing, it's the data. So
yeah, that's true.
I don't know how having a new I don't understand. Well, I don't understand much, so that's okay.
The data going back to the cloud, a lot of this, if it can be processed on the machine, remember they're also
kind of
doing things like
maybe.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know the specs of this chip, but if there's generally, even on a really tiny chip, you can run a little bit of like 3 to 5 models, which is recognition for 3 to 5 things. This is very broadly speaking. This is very generalized. But so with something, this is way more powerful. So you could probably do quite a bit, especially with things like recognition of a person. That can all be stored here on that.
And now your dog.
I was going to say, your particular dog, not just dog in general.
Hmm.
So
Google. You can also go to a pop-up store in New York or Los Angeles, but Verizon will have them now, I guess, to look at and available for sale on Thursday.
But you have to deal with Verizon, and their stupid, is it $20 or $35 activation fee? Which is just basically like,
give us
pay
a little
me
money.
So... Yeah. So we can have you pay us money forever.
Of course, this phone has no headphone jack. It also doesn't have wireless charging. But the circuit breaker, Vlad Zavov, says the real problem with the Pixel 2 is that darn screen.
So what's so bad about the screen?
Well, I have to say, I'm going to withhold judgment until I actually have it. It may not affect me. I think a lot of times... I noticed this on Reddit threads and among Android fanatics. When they really start to pay attention to this stuff, they go, well, it's blotchy. Stuff that you wouldn't notice if you didn't really try to pay attention to it. So now this is more about photography. The left is the iPhone 8 Plus, for those of you watching the video.
And jeez, what happened
actually,
there?
This is poorly screened. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know. So I guess what they're saying here is that the iPhone makes the photo look brighter than it actually is. Oh, I see why it looks so weird. They're taking a picture of the screen.
Oh,
with the polarization.
Yeah, and then the Pixel 2 looks greener than it looks in real life. See, I don't. This is a very bad way to judge anything. I don't.
Well, and this is only on the XL, so mine will not have this issue.
Yeah, because you got the baby phone.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna call it the petite phone, like the petite filet, because by golly,
you got actually baby phone. Nothing baby about those bezels. You got the big bezel, buddy.
I'm fine with bezels. I am not looking at my phone to be a fashion plate.
Yeah,
it'll be okay.
Yeah, you're gonna by the end of the year, you're gonna say, God, that phone looks like it came from the 50s. Who thought that was a good idea?
Hey, right now I'm on an iPhone 6.
Oh.
Everything will be better when I'm not.
Everything will be better.
Everything. My whole world will improve.
So that's that on the Google Pixel. I don't think there's anything much else to say. I thought that chip, though, was really an interesting revelation. And I don't know why.
Me too,
because
I love being right.
Yeah, you were. You really pegged it. You nailed it. You said they must have a chip in there. They must have some hardware for that. Very smart.
Although I did think it was going to be also in the clip, but apparently,
yeah. And did you think it was image processing hardware or AI hardware?
I thought it was something. I think I called it AI for imaging, but
I think you did.
I did think
that
it was,
rings a bell. Yeah.
Okay.
So
I remember.
Yes, I wanted it to be something special because I knew that Google was working on their own chips. They'd hired so many silicon designers, and right. It felt like with what they were talking about that they had some special sauce somewhere in there.
It's really interesting how both Apple and Google see their future as doing highly customized down to the chip hardware.
It makes total sense. You have to control your own destiny both in the features you want to offer and product differentiation, you need to develop your own hardware, also with battery life being so important. The other side of that is it allows you to handle your security and upgrade cycles for a longer period of time if you can control those chips.
Yeah.
And, sorry, I don't know if that was everything you're going to say.
Very much so, and actually more than I was going to say, so thank you. We quote, Paul Theroux quoted Alan Kay on Windows Weekly, who said famously, people who are really serious about software should make their own hardware. And that was something Steve Jobs took very seriously. Alan Kay was an Apple fellow. I think he's an Imagineer now, but a brilliant thinker. And I think that's kind of the point is, yeah, you have to tightly integrate those stacks. It has another advantage, though, because, and this is the thing I don't like from the point of view of a consumer, it pushes people into ecosystems, into silos.
Mm-hmm.
And but you got to have a differentiator. I don't mind that at all. I think you would agree, Stacey, you don't want to see AI silos. And this is a number of people are worried that, I think it was on Sunday we talked about this. Google's hiring all the AI people. Their custom hardware, TensorFlow, all of this is kind of designed to get all of the stuff in Google's court. Do you agree?
Yes, to a certain extent. TensorFlow is really actually a way to economically do AI in Google's cloud.
It's open.
Google's cloud. They want you to go. Yeah. Yes. Now, you can still use, just like there's like CUDA for NVIDIA stuff and Torch and Cafe, all of those things you can still use, like the other AI frameworks you can still use on TensorFlow, the TPUs. So they may not run quite as efficiently. I'm less worried about the hardware integration on the AI side, and maybe I will be proven tragically wrong in a couple decades. But I think more problematic is control of the data and the ability to gather all that data and limit others people's access to it. Because that's where right now we're going to see the rubber meeting the road. So like the Google Photos that you put in there, they become part of Google's enormous data set that just makes it even better. And that's going to make it hard for anyone else to compete. So those are the things I would be looking at.
But what do? You say, oh, Google, I mean, I don't, they collect this data in the process of their business. I don't know how you can stop them.
I don't, and I think we're going to talk about in the coming years, hopefully, and we're already starting, how to measure competition in a world where a monopoly isn't just being able to charge a lot of money for something. A monopoly is much more about being able to develop far beyond your capability, I guess far beyond your competition because of the inherent advantages.
Right. Right.
Well, it's, you know, we've talked before on the show about the doctrine being not the gathering of data, but the use of data. And in a sense, that's what the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulations going into effect in Europe in May, try to do. But the problem with that is that you can't anticipate every use and get permission for every use in the future, which we've talked about in the show in the past. So it's really, how do you regulate? How do you limit? Where are the dangers?
There are open data sets. So, you know, it would be really interesting if, and Google's not going to do this, but like there have been efforts around autonomous cars to say, look, here's data sets for driving in streets and situations and making those open to the community. And I don't know if there's a way to create like a friend for data sets, right? I'm not sure how that might look, or a licensing pool. Remember, those used to be so big.
If you're Google, you fight that tooth and nail, of course, because that really is their secret sauce. And I don't see why Apple should have Google's data any more than Google should have Apple's data.
So, but the big question is, should
we control? Yeah, that's
right. Well, we are controlling it, right? I'm giving Google my photos. Google gave me a really good offer.
I don't know if people are aware that they're giving Google their photos, or how that percolates through the rest of the ecosystem, right? Like, how that gives Google an advantage over, you know, the next hot photo startup. I don't know what that would be. So, I mean, people don't think, they don't make decisions in terms of competition policy. That's not what individual consumers do. That's why we have governments who get involved.
Actually, it's interesting you should mention that, because today at Adobe Max, Adobe announced a revamp of its Lightroom program, a program photographers use. And one of the things they announced is, oh, and when you subscribe, you're going to get a terabyte of free storage. In fact, you don't need to keep your photos on your computer anymore. Why don't I just keep them in our cloud? How about that? Now, I don't know if that's the plan. It's certainly they should tell us if they're going to use, you know, I think they are, because they say, and we are going to be able, you're going to be able to categorize photos now by key, you know, we'll be able to search through your photos for pets and people and keywords, very much like Apple does with its photos and Google does with its photos. Photographers, by the way, are really up in arms over this. In fact, it's such a utter redesign of the tool that most pro photographers use to manage their photos that Adobe's going to continue to offer their old version as Lightroom Classic, and then, which hasn't been updated in a few years, and then Adobe Creative Cloud, Adobe Lightroom CC, will be a brand new, very different version. And one of the things, I bought it immediately because I wanted to take a look at it. I use Lightroom avidly. This is a very good example. This is the preference setting. Now, if you look at the preference settings in Lightroom today, it's page after page after page of complicated settings. This, they don't let you do nothing. It's like very straightforward.
This is cloud. This is all cloud.
Well, it's no, but it's software on your computer too. They just don't want, you can, if you insist, you can keep your originals on your computer. And pros will. A terabyte's not enough to store even all of my photos, let alone a professional's.
You know what I'm asking. Does this work on Chrome? No.
It will with the Android app for...
Stacey, don't make fun.
The whole point of this is that you can then use Adobe Lightroom Mobile, mm-hmm. iOS or Android, and you can even pick off where you left off editing. So you can edit on your desktop and then... The edits will automatically be synchronized.
See, this is where we head. This makes sense. Stacey's going to want to make fun of me, but
So in that respect, it does kind of make sense. But boy, photographers who are used to really a very local process, I don't know. They're going to kind of. I'm a little freaked out. And once you move your catalog over to the new version, that's that. You're in, and it even costs more money. So. it's interesting. We'll see what the reaction. They just. It clearly, Adobe is trying to woo that Google Photos and Apple Photos crowd. I don't know if that's where their market is, but that's what they want to do. You know what? It is a concept. Is it just my imagination, or is it really picked up steam, this notion of companies really creating verticals and silos? For a while, the whole thing was, you know, we were hoping it was going to be more open. You know, you'd be able to use whatever you wanted to use. That's kind of was Microsoft Windows era, where you'd buy the platform Windows, but you'd have all these third-party applications that people would write on top of the platform, and you could use anybody's. Your data stayed on your computer. It was yours. And now everybody, Google, Apple, Microsoft, they're all trying to build silos, Adobe. Where if you use their stuff, you're going to eventually get lock-in, you know? And I understand why, from a business point of view, they do it. But, boy, it sure feels bad as a customer. Okay. I'm off my soapbox. Let's take a break. We're going to talk more about the Supreme Court. We're going to talk lots of Supreme Court. Second Tuesday in October? They just, they're sitting again. They're accepting cases. A number of them apply. Including that Microsoft case, keeping email overseas. But I want to welcome right now a new sponsor to This Week in Google. And you know what? They're a sponsor because of you, Stacey, because you said, I will quote, when I went out and bought the Nest IQ cams, oh, you doofus.
I did. It was a warm and loving doofus.
And I said,
yes.
Well, wait, what? What should I buy? And you said, oh, you got to check this out. This is the Lighthouse. And this is the coolest thing ever. Now, it's not out yet, but you can go to light.house/twit to I think you can you pre-order there? No, just give me your email and you'll get on the list. It'll be out any minute now. I think there we're only a short bit away. You'll get 15% off when they ship and a chance to win a free Lighthouse plus a year of service. So Lighthouse looks like a security camera. It is so much more than a security camera. And by the way, number one, the reason the other ones are out of the house and the Lighthouse is the Lighthouse turns on only when you're not home, if you want. You can have it on all the time. And you may want to because it's got amazing AI built into this thing. It is, you can query it like you would Siri or Google. You could say, for instance, I want to see all the time that humans walked by with pets. In, you know, it knows pets from humans, and it will automatically give you all of those videos. So one of the things that, this was a must for Lisa, it, whenever the owners are home, the camera's not on, so it doesn't get pictures.
How does it know?
You train it.
No, I don't think it's training. I think it's the app, but it might not be.
So it's explicit, yeah.
So I think when you come into the house and either join the Wi-Fi or it sees you via Bluetooth, you know what? I should find out. I'm not sure how it knows.
Right. Sorry. But it does recognize the people.
Oh, there's lots of training. Look at this. This is so cool. So first of all, because we're not home, it was on and an alert was triggered. I just got an alert. Can you zoom in? I don't know if you can see that. But somebody was walking through the living room. It's actually our assistant. But now look at that. I said call 911 or I could say all okay. I can review the video. Wow. I'm going to say, all okay. Now it says, do you want to disarm the home? No, let's stay armed. So this is a live video of our living room. I could see a daily recap as people walk in and out and go through. Isn't that cool? You see how it outlines people? The orange is pets. So I could say, for instance, oh, I just want to see all the pet activity. Were there any pets here? These are pets. Actually, that's there's the pet. Sometimes people with pets walking through our house. This is amazing. You can see the faces. And this is what you were talking about, Stacy. I can see it says, okay, here's all the images of you. That, and then it says, hey, now here's some images. Are these you? That's me. So I'm going to say, yep, that's me. That's not me. So I'm going to say, that's me. But this one, that's not me. So actually that's Uncle Joe, but that's fine. So it's okay if he's in the house. This has a night camera. So it's got in, you know, it can see in the dark, but this is the most exciting thing that's different from everything else. Besides the AI, it's got a depth sensor, a 3D depth sensor. So it has a better sense of
What
does that do, Stacey? Tell me what it does.
A 3D depth sensor makes one of the challenges with cameras and computers is for computer vision, you can spoof things just by showing a picture of your face.
That's so why, for instance, the Nest thought that the Mylar balloons were people.
Right. Okay.
I did not know. It warned me. I can talk to... That makes sense, right? The depth sensor, just like face recognition on an Apple phone. It just makes it a more accurate recognition.
They use different sensors. So the iPhone uses, I can't remember, a structured light sensor, I believe. And this uses...
I can't remember. They told me to, but I can't remember.
Brain.
It's cool.
Nope.
It's so
range
cool.
Range finder. Hold on.
AI, so that's the camera part. So it can see what's going on in the dark. It sees during the day. It has depth sensing, so it recognizes people. It recognizes pets. But then the AI is so amazing. It's natural language queries. So you can say things like, what did the kids do when I was out yesterday? You could say, did you see someone with the dog yesterday afternoon while I was out? It can notify Lisa, when I get home, it can say, if you don't see Michael by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, let me know. If he doesn't come home on time, it will ping you. Oh, and then the wave thing is so cool. Do you know about the wave thing, Stacey?
I do not know about the wave thing.
So if the kids don't have it on their phone, they can walk up to the camera and they wave at the camera. And that pings me. It says Michael's waving, and you can open it on your phone and say there like that. You can say hi, Michael. What's up? It opened up a two-way talk.
That's awesome.
Is that not awesome? They're basically pinging you, by just waving at the camera.
Wow.
If you have an elderly parent, you can say things like, if mom doesn't get up by 7 a.m., let me know. If you don't see any motion in the house, it's a 1080p live stream, two-way talk, night vision. You get a 30-day video history. I love the privacy. And that was kind of table stakes for Lisa. She said, I don't want a camera that's on when we're home. But that's fine. I don't care. I don't want to see what's going on when we're home. I know what's going on. So when we are home, it turns off so that you've got real privacy. Of course, it's encrypted on the way. They do firmware updates automatically. It's encrypted in place, so you have all the privacy you want. You can have permission settings. You have owners, that's me. You have a member, which would be anybody with the app, but you could also have guests. So if you have, like, you're going on vacation and you say, oh, you know, Sally's going to come over and look at when I'm on vacation, you can add her and then remove her. There are a variety of gestures. Now, the pre-orders are sold out, but they're manufacturing like crazy. They're going to be shipping very soon. And I know you want this thing. If mostly I wanted to tell you, don't. This is it. You want, this is the one you want. Don't be a doofus like me. You get an amazing, sophisticated system using the best AI. And if you go to light.house/twit, and you sign up for 15% off Lighthouse when they ship automatically, and you'll be in the contest to win your very own Lighthouse in a year of service free. That's worth $400. I love this. I finally found a camera that's smart and does exactly what I need. And I love it that if you have pets, you could, the fact that you could fire it up and say, just show me when the doggy shows up. What did the dog do while I was gone? Ping me if you see the kids with the cat. Ping me if you don't see the cat by 10 p.m. Tell me if you don't see anyone with a dog from noon to 2 p.m. on weekdays while I'm gone. It's that sophisticated. And you do it in speech. You don't type it. Unbelievable. Tell me when the kids get home today. And that's it. And now it knows. Got it. Notifying you of children today. Done. Your ping has been created. And I can see what's going on right now live. All right. Light.house/twit. They are, I think they're shipping in the next few weeks. I'm not sure, but you'll get 15% off if you sign up and a chance to win your very own Lighthouse. It's a really great deal. Light.house/twit. See site for contest rules. Love it.
You can That's say, cool.
I know. So what's interesting, so you know better than I do, Stacey, but he came from, he's like an AI guru.
DARPA Challenge.
Yes, that's
He was
right.
one of the groups. And the sensor is, so there are three types of depth sensors, just for the tech nerds out there. LiDAR, which we all know and love from cars. Wait.
And costs $11,000 per unit. Okay, go on.
And has moving parts.
Yes.
Time of flight. And that's what's in this kind, a time of flight camera. What that does is it shoots out little things of lasers. Unlike LiDAR, which is like sonar for lasers, a time of flight camera shoots out the lasers and measures the difference between each different pulse of a laser to figure out the shape of things around it. And then there is the structured light camera, which is what's in the iPhone.
Time so now of you know. Flight. Time of flight or mm-hmm. light? Time of light.
Time of light.
Time of light.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe it is time of flight. Hold on.
I think it might be flight.
This is, yeah, it might be flight.
That's the time of flight. It's so cool.
Yes.
This is like wild technology.
It's fun. Yeah.
Very cool. Anyway, thank you. Enough. Sometimes we get an advertiser and I can't stop talking about it. It's just really cool. I really love this.
So LiDAR is direct. LiDAR is a type of laser camera. I'm just answering someone in the chat room. So LiDAR, the beam is continuous.
That's
a time
the
of
rotating
flight camera
thing you see on top of self-driving cars.
Yes. And a time of flight camera just shoots out little bits of infrared.
And you need a LiDAR to drive because you're continually updating your model of the world around you. This is more for recognition of the objects around you. And it could tell pets from humans, for instance. So that's pretty impressive. Really cool. SCOTUS, bunch of SCOTUS stories here. Supreme Court of the United States. They have agreed to review the DOJ versus Microsoft, but this goes back to what is it, GDPR? Your data, and if it's in the U.S. or if it's in outside our shores, can the DOJ get it? And Microsoft has data, I guess, on Irish servers. And this is let me get the actual facts of the case. This is Supreme Court has agreed to hear
We're
the case.
We're pro fact here.
It's been going on for more than a year. Microsoft says that data concerning non-U.S. persons, that's important, non-U.S. persons stored in non-U.S. servers should not be subject to subpoena by the Department of Justice. The DOJ says, nope, you're an American company. Doesn't matter if it's a U.S. person, doesn't matter if it's overseas. So, this is a big deal because if you're Microsoft or Apple or Google, you don't want to lose all your overseas customers because the minute they use you, suddenly they're subject to U.S. law enforcement. This is an article from Extreme Tech. If SCOTUS declares that the U.S. government can reach into cloud databases located on servers in other nations and pluck out any information on any private citizen of another country at any time, then the trust Europeans will have in any U.S. provider of cloud or email services will drop to zero real quick. No wonder Microsoft's fighting this one. No idea how the Supreme Court will go on this one. Just it's completely, this is so different from any case they've seen before. Any thoughts?
The internet makes us all follow the same rules?
Or yeah, but it doesn't.
How is that going to work in practice? Yeah. I mean, we're going to need a treaty, I guess, for this, and that's going to be...
That's going to be dangerous.
Yes, it is.
I heard a politician say in Europe, I won't say where, but an event, off-the-record event, but I heard a politician say, cautioning the people in the room, he said, we're one terrorist attack away from legislation to ban anonymity.
Yeah, that's probably true.
God help us. I mean, it's, and the same politician was being blunt with us saying, you don't want government to do this. We don't know what we're talking about.
and yet, you know, the reason we have these rules now is because of 9/11, and people will cry out saying, protect us. That's your job, protect us.
But it's an emotional protect us. It's you know, what's this actually going to do?
Yeah.
And I'm always concerned about the lowest common denominator of freedom, highest common denominator of highest watermark of regulation. That once the process is set up so that a nation can demand X, then every nation will demand that, including the worst of nations.
The Supreme Court on Monday declined to review, this is good news for Google, I think, a petition asserting that the term Google has become too generic and that is not qualified for trademark protection. Google has not fallen victim to genericide, and that is not, so basically I think that means, since the judges refused to hear it, that Google is trademarkable. A guy, Chris Gillespie, had registered 763 domain names with the word Google in it. Google claimed trademark infringement, forced Gillespie to forfeit the domains he sued to invalidate the trademark. A federal appeals court ruled last year that even though the word Google, lowercase g, has become synonymous for searching the internet, the trademark should still be valid. It's not Kleenex, it's not Xerox, because Google's more than a search engine. That's the ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruling. And then Gillespie, who must have very deep pockets, appealed to the Supreme Court.
Yep, he's done.
But he's done. So the lower court, the circuit court ruling holds.
Works for now.
That seems fair.
Yeah.
Kleenex is still a trademark. Xerox is still a trademark. For the same reason.
They spend a fortune with lawyers protecting them. Yeah.
It means more than a tissue or a photocopy. It's bigger than just that. All right, that's it for SCOTUS News, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Jeff fake news ads? Google served ads that were
that's pretty funny.
Blatantly fake to PolitiFact and Snopes, a place people go to check facts.
Oops.
No, Melania Trump is not leaving the White House. No, HGTV star Joanna Gaines has not abandoned her husband and her show. No, Joel Osteen is not leaving his wife. Those were fake news.
But is it fake, by the way, that we have a fake Melania?
What?
Have you seen that?
I saw that.
Have you seen that?
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean fake Melania?
Let
me just circle this here. See, this is the ad.
Get to the rest of the story.
This is a Google ad. On an article, it says why Melania isn't staying at the White House. This was old, obviously. She stayed in New York. So PolitiFact is talking about that. This is a Vogue article. Right at the top, obviously, somebody anxious to, I don't know, do what? So
promote this idea.
So confusion bought an ad saying, hey, that'd be a good place to buy an ad. And Google let them. But this is the problem with programmatic ad buys, right? I mean, it's all automatic.
The thing that I've been thinking lately about advertising, I don't know if I said this on the show last week or not, if I did, stop me, but blogs and the web democratized and opened up the creation of content and bad guys followed.
Yes.
Advertising is also democratized and bad guys followed.
Yes.
And we're used to a world where the whole world was edited. And the first time somebody used a bad word on the internet, we thought, oh, they've schmutzed the whole internet. It's ruined. As if someone put a bad word in the New York Times.
Yeah.
Same thing on advertising. Somebody put a bad ad online, the whole internet is ruined. Well, no, we just have a completely new reality we got to figure out, which means we need new rules and new structures, and that's all true. But we shouldn't be acting so shocked that people are gaming these systems.
I don't know if it's even gaming. If you're going to buy that ad, you're going to put it on Snopes and PolitiFact. That's the perfect place to put it. And now you know why people use ad blockers. They were using Google AdSense. It's automatic. You buy the ad. You buy the site. You can buy a site directly, Jeff? I guess you can.
Depends. No, usually
you buy a
word,
right? Or a search.
Yeah, I think that's probably what you do. No, you can't buy the site because that would undercut the direct sales of the site.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when the New York Times ran Google ads for the first time way, way back when, and I asked the executives, I said, what? How can you do that? They said, well, no, nobody can buy the New York Times through this side door. They can only buy keywords. They can only buy certain characteristics. They can only buy audience. So yeah, I think if you're clever enough in how you put the ad buy in, then you'll end up on fact-checking sites.
By the way, Google does not like this, and they call it tabloid cloaking, buying ads for fake tabloid stories on legitimate news sites. Google says these types of scammers use timely topics and ads made to look like new website headlines. Google said it suspended more than 1,300 advertiser accounts in 2016 for doing it. This month,
Jesus.
This month, Google said it had introduced additional controls to help publishers filter out sensational or tabloid ads. So they put it on the publisher to kind of block that stuff.
Could they also deal with the grossly inaccurate health ads? Because those are everywhere.
Everywhere.
They're actively harmful in some cases.
Yeah, they say they're going after it, but it hasn't been good enough.
Facebook's got the same problem. I see those ads all the time on Facebook.
I mean, I'm not talking about things like, you know, get rid of belly fat. I'm talking about things like ingest crazy poisons to make your energy levels rise.
No, that's not good.
I've got to say this. I'm sorry. This is gonna sound a little political. It's not, but I this is too much. So evidently, InfoWars sells some kind of
supplement.
Vitamin supplement. Yes.
Yes.
Alex
and they
Jones
contain sperm damaging lead.
Oh, nice.
I'll let you write the jokes.
Nice, nice.
The chemicals were was found in InfoWars caveman paleo formula.
Don't buy it. I have to say this is a longstanding tradition in radio as well. In fact, one of the things that makes it hard for me. Oh. Kids came
Notification.
Home. Kids came home. Yeah. one of the things that makes this hard for me to sell my weekend radio shows at many radio stations across the nation no longer have programming on the weekends. They sell the entire weekend. And oftentimes it's dubious products, but you buy it. You know, it's very lucrative for the radio stations. It's been $5,000 for a half hour and sell supplements, and they sound like real radio ads. So this is a long-standing problem. Let the buyer beware, I guess. I don't know. Really?
So,
wouldn't the best way to handle this to be have the FDA regulate anything you put in your mouth? But, of course, this doesn't because the supplement makers lobbied the FDA saying, oh, it's a food. It's not a medicine. And so they have lower standards that, you know, it's too bad.
Well, if you can't believe that you have only one first lady, then what can you
do? All right, tell us what's this.
I put it on the rundown.
Melania? Oh, come on.
So if you go down,
oh,
there's a video there.
This is New York Magazine. See, I have to tell you, this is bad.
People are looking at that video and saying, that's not Melania. They're putting pictures of Melania.
She has big sunglasses on. Actually, you know, it doesn't look like Melania.
Right. No, the lips look different.
It looks like a wig. The lips are different. She's wearing big sunglasses.
Exactly. It's fake Melania. So people are having entirely too much fun with this now. So
Stacey, isn't that a wig? That's a wig.
I don't know.
It's not even a good wig.
Women don't have like a gene that.
Don't you have wig radar? I thought you had wig radar.
I'm like, I own a wig, but I do not know. I mean, yeah, don't know.
I always ask my wife if somebody's had work done. She seems to know.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, that's a skill that's developed over time and continual consumption of People and Entertainment Weekly.
She had work done. Oh yeah, she's had work done. I can't tell. Look at the lips. Oh yeah, they are large. That's work. Anyway, I don't. Yeah, the problem with doing stuff like that. Maybe it's true. I don't know what you do with it, but the problem with that is it distracts from much more serious topics. How's Puerto Rico doing lately, by the way?
Yeah, exactly. I've been thinking about that. All the stuff today about the calls and this and that. News is doing all of that. You're right. They're not talking about Puerto Rico. They're not talking about issues that matter. You're absolutely right. And they can justify it saying we're covering the White House. They are, and they need to, but huge issues are going. But a Twitter account called Alex Trimboli, which I think is Nicole Cliff, said, if you do not choose to believe in the existence of fake Melania, I encourage you to find more room in your heart for joy and whimsy today. Sometimes you just need it.
But there is, and I think Twitter has exacerbated this, there's always been gotcha journalism, right? And I think Twitter has brought it to a fine art.
Oh, yeah.
Look at Al Michaels, who I think said tell me if I'm wrong, the most innocuous thing you could say on Sunday Night Football, he said, the Giants are having a worse week than Harvey Weinstein. And people were calling on Twitter, calling for him to be fired. Fired! I don't even think that's tasteless. Maybe it is, but there is this kind of very fine, and Twitter is such an outrage engine that everything rises to this very high pitch. And as a result, nothing matters. Right? Or am I wrong?
Well, that's only if you use Twitter as your end-all, be-all barometer.
Well,
for
but notice that
about,
the news media does.
I take issue with that. Some news media may, and they do report on things happening on Twitter, maybe to a greater extent than they probably should.
That's our job.
But, you know, Puerto Rico is still in the New York Times. CNN is still running stories on these things that matter, like healthcare and ways to figure out what to do after Trump's canceling subsidies. I mean, these are all stories. Now, the things people talk about on Twitter are obviously going to be the fun, the silly, the less nuanced stuff, because no one really wants to get in a healthcare debate in 140 characters.
Right.
No, or 280. But here's the problem, Stacey. I know now that newsrooms across the world have now full-time jobs called trending editors.
I know.
All they
but
do
that's,
is go into Twitter. Well, they go into Twitter, which is Leo's point, and they say, well, we got to have that too.
This is news.
It's a follow on to the old SEO. And it's a waste of resource. It's a waste of attention. It's not really journalism. It's what the business model pushes them to do.
Right. I mean, I remember at Fortune, we jumped on those stories, or they pressed us to jump on those stories. And some of us were like, no, but that was part of the business model. We had to get that. And those stories did good traffic, even though they were utter crap.
So you're proving what I just said, which is,
yes, you are.
For whatever reason, there, and I think you can say some of this stems from Twitter. We've become this gotcha nation because it drives traffic. And although I read this quote from George Carlin yesterday, I'm going to read it again. I have to find it. It's on. It's a great Instagram account called Niche that has great pictures of people and their quotes. George Carlin says, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about, and that's politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck. Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities. And they are elected by American citizens. This is the best we could do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. Term limits ain't going to do any good. You're just going to end up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here. And I'd say it's not just politicians, it's news. We get the news we deserve. The stuff we read.
That's true. I have written... I mean, my whole job for a long time covering things like tech policy was to deliver actual nuanced news for people. And it didn't get read. That was frustrating. And then, I mean, it's true. And I'm not saying that I am the best writer, because I am certainly, that is not what I'm great at. But the people who did read it, it did make its way into places where decisions were made. So while the mass market may not consume in-depth policy research or deep technically reported stories, you know, there are people who are making decisions that do look at that. So there's two audiences for news. There's the entertainment, kind of quick distractions. And then there's people who are actually trying to find out what's really happening and get real insights. And those people are often the people making actual decisions.
Yeah.
And that's worth thinking about as we figure out like what role the media plays and who's paying attention to it.
You know, you're absolutely, you know, you've got high integrity. You're absolutely right. And we shouldn't despair. But you got to admit, pumpkin spice is always going to get more clicks than, you know, tax policy.
Well, sure. So but I mean, what do you talk about with people? You talk about pumpkin spice.
Right.
The challenge is when we talk about tax policy, we don't currently have a repertorial cohort that can actually break those issues down for people. Yeah, and so what happens
that's
is
that's maybe a good point. That's Jeff's problem. That's your fault, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
You need to breed better journalists.
So
it's not a function.
Go ahead. Let Jeff respond.
Yeah, Jeff.
I can see the steam. Well,
when I was in London, I saw a play called Ink about Rupert Murdoch and the creation of the Sun. Really well done play. And the motif through it at the beginning and end starts with the five W's: who, what, when, where, why, plus how. And the argument was from the editor Murdoch hired to start the Sun, or the remade Sun, was why is boring. Why doesn't matter anymore? When you get to why, the story ends. So what we care about now is what next. And that's what we do, right? It's this happened, and this is happening next, and we can predict what's going to happen, and it's all just what happened. It's not moving past. And I, on the way back, I read a little book about truth and the complications of figuring out truth by a philosopher, a bookstore I picked up in London. And truth is hard. Truth is not easy. I'm not saying truth is relative, but truth is not absolute, and truth is difficult. And we have this view that we in journalism are here to find the truth and spread the truth. No, I actually think I'm coming more and more to think that our job is to find peace, is to enable society to be able to have conversations. You're right, Stacey. Conversations. Right.
Truth, because truth is often divisive and angering and causes friction, not resolution.
And we're in this age of emotions, but the emotions we have are the ones that are all charged up by media,
right,
rather than emotions of empathy and understanding and concern and human decent emotions like that. And so, you know, I think journalism's job is to feed the public conversation, to convene communities in conflict into conversation. And yes, information has a role in that. Absolutely. Of course,
you know
it does.
What? It didn't used to be the media's job. Media's job used to be truth. And the politician's job was to lead. I think you're just, this is the problem, is there's a vacuum from the people who are supposed to do their job, bringing the nation together to have these tough conversations, to come to resolution, to find a solution that works for everybody. They're not doing that. So you're saying the media should take over, basically.
Well, I'm not that we would trust
us to do so. We're not elected officials. Yeah. We're driven by by profit motive.
So I know nobody wants to be I love your optimism, Stacey. I think we're an idiocracy.
Normally I'm the optimist.
We have actually hit idiocracy. It's over. We're screwed. I'll be the despair. I'll be despair for the day. You guys could be optimism.
But if you really believe that, that's a very nihilistic way to.
I don't know what I think. Sometimes the truth you have to say, this is what is. I mean, I'll work against it. I'm not going to just give up. I'll work against it. But I think we've hit that, and I think that the reason we cover it on this show is because it's. To a great degree because of the rise of social media.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Well, I wouldn't go too overboard there and blame.
Even before Facebook, I could tell you that, you know, I used to work at a business journal, and when we started with the web, we would put certain stories. We got the most clicks about restaurants opening and, you know, anything involving a puppy.
Yeah, people. I don't blame people for wanting to see pictures of puppies. Those are cute.
So I quote from The Spectator. When I go to England, I get to actually read things. It's wonderful. They have great bookstores there. Mm-hmm. The leader, the editorial in The Spectator this week. But the web was always going to be no more or less moral or vicious than the people who used it. Right? It's back to your George Carlin line. That it is us. We have met the internet, and it is us.
It's made of people.
Yeah.
Actually, I kind of like this Twitter. Ted Cruz, you're senator.
God.
I didn't realize this, but apparently there was a conspiracy theory that he was the Zodiac killer, which is which is demonstrably false, by the way. He's not.
But funny.
But he apparently thought it was funny because look what he tweeted.
It's good to have people.
For those who cannot see,
the Zodiac killer letter. That's the encrypted letter that he sent to the newspapers. One of them. And Ted Cruz, without comment, he's responding to a Ben Sasse's tweet. I was wearing my Lee Harvey Oswald was framed T-shirt. And then Ted responds with these without comment. Doesn't say.
Who would think that he has a sense of humor? Who would imagine?
That's the sense of humor. And that's also a little effort. He's got to go find the letter. He's got to copy it.
Oh, I suspect he has someone.
He's got it lying around. Once someone says you're the Zodiac killer, you know you've got that just, it's like memeable. It's right there.
This is pretty funny. It's the first time Cruz has acknowledged this. It's maybe not a conspiracy theory. Maybe it's a joke. Pretty funny. And I don't think Ted Cruz's father knew Lee Harvey Oswald either or had anything to do with the assassination. That's another thing. That's another muddled-headed thing we've got ourselves into is conspiracy theories.
There have always been conspiracy theories. They're just the people who share them can now find each other easily on the internet. And then they can
create
these cults.
Yeah. I just got a book called Fantasyland. that is about the history. I think did I mention this last week? I think I did. It's about the how America went haywire, a 500-year history of conspiracy theories by Kurt Anderson. And it says, you know, this has been, conspiracy theories have been since the very beginning. He wrote. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say he wrote True Believers as well. And he founded Spy Magazine, which means he has a sense of humor. One of those Harvard Lampoon guys.
The smarty pants.
Smarty pants. I'm looking forward to listening to this, although I have my bedside table is starting to pile up. It's my digital bedside table because I don't actually read books, although I did order the new waterproof Amazon Kindle.
I lost my Kindle, you guys, and Alaska Airlines is keeping it hostage. I will never see it again.
They won't give it to you?
No. They can't ID authorized it when I left it on a plane, so people could not buy books on my account. And then they were like, well, we can't identify it as yours, so I will never see it again.
So they admit they have it, but we can't give it to you?
They admitted that they sent it to the baggage claim in the San Diego airport.
Wow.
And I didn't catch it before they sent it to the central baggage processing place. And once it's there, it is
gone
forever.
That's a lot better than my Kindle. I left it in the seat back, and I'm sure somebody just took it. I never got it back.
Well, the end result is the same.
Yeah.
I just had to call a couple people and they pretended to look for it, or they were like, you shouldn't have deauthorized it. I was like, oh, thank you.
So I bought, well, you should get this too. It's a little pricey. This is the Oasis. It's 7 inches, a little bigger, 300 DPI, waterproof. They have one with 32 gigs, enough storage to put audiobooks and your Kindle books on it. And you can play the audio through a Bluetooth speaker so you can read and listen, which I like because I like audiobooks, as you know. I'll get it on Halloween and I'll show you. Do you need a new Kindle?
I am going to get a new Kindle.
I could probably send you my old Kindle. I have a Paperwhite if you want.
I will take your Paperwhite.
Let me get your address and I will send you my old Paperwhite if I can find it. I'll deauthorize it so you don't buy
it. I was going to say, actually, don't.
Okay, I won't deauthorize it. Yeah, they can see all the books I was reading.
It'll be the gift that keeps on giving.
Exactly. I was like, and buy more.
I hope you like books about
Lisp. I read a
book
a week. So.
Do you? I didn't realize. I have been subscribing to Amazon Unlimited for a year. I didn't even realize it. That's like $120 I'll never see again. Is it good? Is it worth it? This is the one where, I mean, do they have decent books on Unlimited?
Okay, so if you like airport reading what I think of it.
That's what I think of it, too, and that's why I don't think I want it.
Or if you have a kid, there's actually some fun kid books. So I got it during they have a special during, like, not Prime Day, but Black.
That's probably when I bought it, because I think it's almost exactly a year. That's probably when I bought it.
Yeah, so it was like half off, so I subscribed. And there's a lot of older books, like there's some Michael, is it Pollan? Omnivore's Dilemma, and all those are on there.
Oh, I like him. That's good. All right. I like his stuff.
But I use it mostly
I end up buying a lot of esoteric stuff.
Yeah, the stuff I want is probably not going to be
there. Here's what I bought in
there.
London.
What's it
called? A Short History of the Truth.
Oh, I like it.
Oh.
Julia Bagnini.
Post-Truth.
Oh, dear. Did you just buy everything that had truth in the name?
Another one called Post-Truth. And then the Brett's A to Z of Modern Manners. I thought that would be a nice little look at civility.
Wow.
Oh, Jeff.
Let me see if there's any truth on the Amazon Kindle Unlimited store. Truth. Speaking the Truth in Love, a Response to Christian Universalism. The Naked Truth About Sex and Marriage. The Merciful Truth, the book two of the Mercy Kilpatrick series. Book three of the Soulstone Mage series, Mountain of Truth. The Truth About Taya. I think it's not the same kind of truth as you're looking for.
No, it's a different truth.
This is the truth book I'm going to buy. It's a Donovan Legacy book. Don M. Turner.
Let us not mock romance novels.
Wait a minute, though. It's not just a romance novel.
It's contemporary Christian romance.
Does that mean they don't have sex?
I would imagine not.
Her pulse pounded as he touched her crucifix and said, let's get married and have 12 children. The end.
You're going to get in trouble.
But seriously, aren't romance novels really just erotica in sheep's clothing?
I don't read a lot of them. So
I'm not asking you, Stacey.
No, I'm like.
Don't think I'm being sexist here. I'm not asking you. I'm asking them.
I think there are people who read them because they're easy reading. They're like,
they call them bodice rippers for a reason.
Yeah, but they're like the Lee. What is it? Reacher, Jack Reacher books. Like that feels to me trashy, like the ultimate easy male fantasy, right?
No, you're
it's
right.
It's like easy, and I'm awesome.
Yeah.
I am beautiful, and some man wants me, and they will treat me well, and. You know, that's...
As soon as I get my new Kindle, the very first book I'm getting is this. Truth. Donovan Legacy, book one. He doesn't even look like he has a penis.
Wait, what?
See, all these other romance novels, they've got that guy with the long hair and a bare chest. This guy's wearing a white T-shirt. They both have their arms folded.
He has good pecs, though.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the universal symbol for you're not getting any till marriage. I'm sorry. We should cut that whole segment out right there. I've gone off the deep
end. You're in trouble.
I found a book for you, Jeff. It says truth in the...
Yeah.
Sorry. My meds wore off, I think. I have no excuse. Moving right along, Google announces new education initiatives, $1 billion in global grants to nonprofits. See, this is the kind of thing that doesn't get clicks. I'm just saying.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't care about that. Let's talk. Can we talk? Can we talk about the self-learning AI? I mean, can we talk about something fun?
Yeah.
Or
let's take a break and then we'll talk about that. Quantum computing, self-learning AI, and why Google Maps no longer has tiny donuts.
And my new job description.
Cupcakes. Tiny cupcakes, I'm sorry.
The job I want.
The job you want.
The job I want.
Not the job you've
here.
Got.
That's the job Coming I want. Up. It's in here.
Everybody knows that a website, a podcast... movie, the quality of the imagery makes a big difference. We are visual. If you need sound effects for your podcast production, a video background for your website, a hero image on your blog, you're going to want to go to the stock video marketplace. I want to make a recommendation. A new place we found called Storyblocks. It's Video Blocks by Storyblocks. It's at videoblocks.com/twig. Get this. It's an all-you-can-eat plan. All the content royalty-free, commercial, personal, fine. You own it forever. Forever. 115,000 studio-quality HD videos, After Effects templates, motion backgrounds, and more. New clips all the time, so there's always something fresh to download. We paid hundreds of dollars a month for this in the past. Video Blocks by Storyblocks is $149 a year. A year, once. You pay a year. And you've got this access to this all year long. And you also get exclusive discounts on their marketplace. I love the marketplace. That's where they bring you together with artists making videos, 5 million additional videos. You pay the artists directly. The artist gets 100%. And because you're a member, you get 40% off. So VideoBlocks doesn't take a cut of this. This is just, they just establish a marketplace. It's just a way to get you even happier about the deal you're getting. VideoBlocks.com/twig. 90,000 customers, including the best, biggest, NBC, National Geographic, the History Channel, the Travel Channel. You don't go out, you know, you need drone footage of the beach. You need helicopter footage of downtown. You need explosions and flames. Don't shoot it. It's all there in beautiful high-def quality, studio quality. Look at that. Look at that. That's gorgeous. Sure, you could go to San Diego and put a drone up in the air, but why do that when for $149 a year, unlimited access? And by the way, your rights to use it are yours forever. Videoblocks.com/twig. This was a discovery when we found this. This saves us a lot of money from the folks at Storyblocks. So I'm really sad I didn't get this feature in Google Maps. And now it's
gone.
Yeah,
I didn't either.
I really wanted it. Yeah. I guess it was a test, right? So what they, you would ask for directions at Google Maps, and it would say, if you walked, you would be able to eat this many tiny cupcakes. Did you get it, Stacey?
I did not get it. But this is the sort of thing, I'll just tell everybody, I had an eating disorder in high school and college. And what people say about it being triggering, as much as I'm kind of like, oh, really? Like my 11-year-old is constantly triggered by things. I'm like, okay, stop. But there is a very real...
I want to be sensitive distressing. To that. I have family members who've had eating disorders. I myself have an eating disorder in the sense that I can't stop eating. So I understand, and I don't mean to make light of eating disorders. So that's one of the reasons they stopped is the community tried it and said, you know what? This is these tiny cupcakes are triggering. So you might have found this triggering when you were a teenager.
I don't know. It's actually more like I would find it in triggering as I would find it an extra thing to think about.
Yeah.
It's one extra thing that I don't need. It's not a piece of information I want to see, and it would force my brain to make calculations and decisions that it probably shouldn't. It shouldn't go there.
So Stacey, what about all the fitness trackers?
So
nomenclature? Yeah, what was the
So the fitness tracker, I wear one, and I actually have set rules for myself. But that is a place I expect to think it, and that's where I want that information, and I look at it when I want that information. And I don't think about it except when I'm doing it, if that makes sense. So it's kind of like someone popping up in a place that you don't expect and going, think about your food and eating and calories. And you're like, I don't want to do that
now. Okay.
So
here's a tweet from Kate Bond, who's a New Zealander, I guess. Dr. Kate Bond on Twitter. Google Maps now includes calorie estimates, and I really don't need this kind of judgment right now. The average person burns 56 calories by walking a kilometer. It's kind of so Google's, thought was, oh, this is good because this will let people know that if they walked, they would, you know, it'd be good for fitness. But it's not going to be the end of the world if we don't have it, and if it bothers some people, fine.
And I think it's a, you know what? I can see it being an awesome feature. Like, what if I could put in like Krispy Kreme donuts? Like at the end of the day, Google can tell me how many Krispy Kreme donuts, and that's like an optional thing. Great.
But that should be something you choose.
Right. Because there are plenty of things where you're like, oh crap, you know? And again,
what if
it's
they,
not
now,
the end of the
is it the cupcakes that were bad? Or was it just the kind of the nannying saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Yeah.
It's the nannying. It's the idea that you should be thinking about calories
all
right
the
now.
Time. Yeah, you're right. I get it. So somebody who's anorexic, for instance, is constantly worried, and there's no reason to. They're just looking for directions to say, "Oh, by the way," because that's triggering. Now I understand it's the world is going to be triggering. You can't eliminate all triggers, but this doesn't really add that much.
Well, it's not
to the world. This isn't making the world a better place.
Well, no, and it's more, I hate the word triggering. I really do. It's a loaded word that doesn't, it's making something into a choice that beforehand, and that honestly was probably Google's intent, is to make you think about, should I walk or should I drive?
But all I want is directions. I don't want to be told how many calories it's going to consume. That isn't what that map is designed to do. If I want a calorie counter, I'll install a calorie counter. I think that's
reasonable. Anorexia and eating disorders are about control.
Right.
And when this is a reminder that you could control this to an even greater extent. Yes. So why aren't you?
Yes. Why aren't you walking everywhere? Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. And really more to the point, it's perpendicular to the purpose of maps. It's not what maps is supposed to be doing. So it's not a huge loss. I mean,
well, it's when doesn't the Apple Watch have that thing that tries to make you stand up every
So yeah, and I turned that off because I find it hectoring.
The hell out of me. It's hectoring. Nanny stuff.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Well, I have mine on my Fitbit. It notifies me
if I'm
sitting.
Yeah, but you should have a choice. And that's what you're wearing a Fitbit to do.
Right.
I understand. On the one hand, you can't eliminate all the triggers from the world. Things are triggering. You know, I have friends who can't go to violent movies. It's very, because of PTSD, it's very triggering for them. So they don't go to violent movies. But if you were to thrust a violent movie in their face, that would be a bad thing to do to them. So I understand that. And do we really need tiny cupcakes? In fact, I'm feeling guilty already. I should have walked here today. So
I was like, yeah, this is not a hill I would die on, but it is.
You still have the
exactly,
segue?
Exactly. I do. That's not exercise.
I know it's not. You
so
still
don't
have
use it.
It.
No, we
How
do
long
it for
has it been
fun.
Since you used it?
Oh, the kids use it. I use it once in a while because it's fun. Really? It's really fun. But
yeah.
You're right. In fact, I was tempted by an electric bicycle, and I thought, no, I want the exercise when I ride a bike. I don't want an electric bicycle. Not that we have huge hills here. If we had huge hills, maybe I would. Google Photos now recognizes your pets as people.
Well, we talked about that.
Oh, we already
briefly.
Did?
We mentioned it.
Well, Jeff
we
and I alluded to it.
On this show or a previous show?
Just earlier. It was a Google Photos section.
I went to it and it doesn't do it for me yet.
No.
Oh.
No.
Oh, I can't use Google Photos because I'm not on my Pixel 2 yet.
Well, you can go to photos.google.com. And then when you go when you go to photos.google.com, it shows you peoples.
You want me to use the web? What?
The web. And when you look at people, I got a lot of people. Fashion. I have to say, this is pretty impressive. Notice that I only care about the first row or two of people. After that, I haven't labeled anybody.
Holy Hannah-Croy, you have got so many people in your pictures.
It's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. I don't even have that on my Facebook.
You know what's cool about this? If I got Alzheimer's, they could use this as like a book. Now, who's that? And then I could practice. So
I don't think that's how Alzheimer's works.
No? Oh, okay. I was in a mental hospital once, saw somebody doing that. So I just thought that's maybe what you do. Ooh. Anyway, if you need it, it's here, John. Look at the people. But I don't have any aminals in there. Actually, there's a picture of my daughter when she was a baby. That's pretty good.
Aww.
Google Photos. Is there anything you can't do?
Wow.
That is a cute baby. It doesn't know the difference between baby Abby and grown-up Abby.
It doesn't?
No. But that's really young.
It was able. So I have a picture of my daughter at the age of like 18 months, and it knew that. Or maybe she was a year old. It recognized her there too. Well, she's 11, so her face is probably still.
Stacy, wait till your daughter's 25, then see.
Nope. It's not going to happen.
And married.
She will always be 11.
And living in Montreal. Then see.
I thought you were
going to. No, not living in your backyard. No. I went the other way with that. Google AI, this is the one Stacy really wanted to do, can create better machine learning code than humans.
That coding class you're taking?
Forget it.
Never mind.
Stop. Don't do it. This is a little misleading. Google has a system called AutoML.
So this wasn't the story.
Oh, this is not the one you're talking about?
Oh, it's not the story. What's
no, I was
story,
talking I about... But that is auto learning to code. So that is also related. But I was talking about the AlphaGo Zero research paper that came out today.
Oh.
I think it's in there. Did I put it in there?
I didn't see it there, no.
Oh, no. What if they didn't?
I'll find it.
AlphaGo Zero learns on its own. It's under Alphabet. It's the last item. So,
well, same idea, right? The same idea is not writing software, but it's able to create knowledge about itself. But isn't that what?
Yes.
But wait a minute! Isn't that though?
Isn't that what learning systems
do? Neural networks. That's the whole idea of a neural network.
No. So, if you're doing, depending on the type of learning that it's doing, a data scientist actually helps train the model. So it's saying it's nudging it. It's like, oh, you know, this is, you're more right here. And then it's like, it adapts. Yeah. This is doing it without any human intervention whatsoever.
Oh, okay. Wow.
This is like what DeepMind did with learning how to play video games. You basically give it a goal. You say, here's what we want you to get to. Figure out how to do it.
So here's the example that The Guardian says. Previous versions of AlphaGo learned their moves by training on thousands of games by strong players, which, you know, as you say, were fed to it. AlphaGo Zero had no such help. Instead, it learned purely by playing itself millions of times over. So it just played Go at random, and the goal was to win by taking over territory, but swiftly improved as it discovered winning strategies. The interesting thing about that is it might learn to play better because humans might have a style of play that's influenced by each other, but it's not necessarily the right style. And so it might be learning from humans that are imperfect. Instead, it's learning by actual experience. It takes a lot longer,
of
course.
What was kind of fun is it figured out some really difficult things very quickly, right, and then some very simple things. Right. It took a while. So it's learning in a different way than we learn, which I guess makes sense because it's a computer and we're people, but it's still kind of cool.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that replicating the human brain is the goal.
So this is... Right. So they use a rating system, the ELO rating system. They use it in chess. I guess they use it in Go as well. This is a video of how AlphaGo, make it a little higher, how AlphaGo learned. It started at zero, like it knew nothing, no knowledge of the game. But look how fast, and it's not a straight up. It's up and down. But in the long run, it got to a very strong, in 3 days, it got to stronger than the original AlphaGo. Now it starts to taper off, of course, because it can't grow as fast. In 3 weeks, it reached the level that defeated the 60 top professionals online and the world champion 3 out of 3 games last year. And now it's better.
Off the charts.
In 40 days, it's better than all other versions of AlphaGo.
How many times did it play to get there?
Oh, that's a great question. Must have been hundreds of millions of games, right? Because it can play a lot faster if it doesn't have to
put those
stones.
10,000 hours ideas just straight to hell.
Now, Go is a very rigorous, and rigid structure, right? So, you know, for instance, I had for years, and my kids love this as a screensaver, something called Breathe Walker, which is a very popular kind of artificial intelligence thing. It was a four-legged creature. I'll show you a video of it at work. It's a four-legged creature that teaches itself to walk, but at first doesn't do a very good job. But over many iterations, it gets better and better and better and eventually walks. But it might take months or even years because you start with nothing. I love that. It's the best screensaver ever.
How does it define, but isn't that all about the goal?
The goal is distance.
What defines good walking? Oh, distance. I see. Okay.
So it tries different strategies at random with its four articulated legs. Some of them are like this, and you don't move anywhere, and until it gets somewhere. And it's really interesting to see it, but it's not nearly as, of course, we can't do as many iterations as fast. So it didn't take 40 days to become the best Go player in the world. I think Go is so much more structured, it might be a little bit easier. I don't know. It's pretty impressive. So that's very different than a computer that writes its own code, but it's related in this sense. And this is the thing that scares humans. And this, to me, is what the real singularity is. You know, often they talk about the singularity being when a computer mind is indistinguishable from a human mind. It's as, you know, it's as good as, or at least you can't tell the difference. My singularity is when computers or artificial intelligences can start designing themselves, because that's the bend in the hockey stick, because we're slow. So as long as we have to write the code or teach the computer to play Go, it's going to take longer. The minute the computer can just say, let me take it from here and do a million moves a second or write its own code, the acceleration of learning just takes off. You've got the exponential elbow in the hockey stick. That to me is the real singularity. And it sounds like we might be getting there. Auto ML.
I think that'll...
Go ahead.
So that will be important for times to come, because we cannot, as people, generate the code we're going to need in as flawless a manner as we have to. So, you know, I know this is scary in some ways, and we should be talking about how to audit things and, you know, how to look at outcomes and test stuff, but we don't do things by hand anymore. There's so many, like, we don't hand stitch our clothing anymore. It's ridiculous that we should have to hand write our code when we're putting so much of our lives in tech. That was kind of not as eloquent as I wanted it to be, but you get where I'm going with this.
Yeah. And I don't think that, I think that the two issues are orthogonal. So I think there's the one issue, the computer writing its own code, that's separate from the, what you don't want a computer to do is optimize for its success. That's the famous paperclip example, right? If you build a paperclip machine that is trained to optimize for building paperclips, that's all it does, and success is only the number of paperclips it generates, eventually it eats the whole world because everything is about making paperclips. That's different, in my opinion, that's orthogonal from the goal of having computers write their own software. That's two different problems, I hope. You know that example, the paperclip?
Yes.
Machine.
Isn't writing your own software just an extension of a learning system? Of a learning network?
Yeah, sort of.
Right? I mean, it's I'll use the tools I need to. If you think about
it, AlphaGo is writing its own software because it's saying, how do I win at Go? Yeah, you're right.
And yeah, because we heard this said at I.O. where you have a system that says, here's the goal to, I think in the example, it's to correctly identify photos. And we'll create them, but they said the software could create its own tests, basically its own software to do that more efficiently and effectively. It would beat itself.
It's called the Paperclip Maximizer. It's the canonical thought experiment. I'm reading from the Less Wrong Wiki, which I like the name of, showing how an artificial general intelligence, even one designed competently and without malice, could ultimately destroy humanity. This was Nick Bostrom proposed this in 2003. The goal is to maximize the number of paperclips in its collection. If it has been constructed with roughly human level of general intelligence, the AGI might collect paperclips, earn money to buy paperclips, or begin to manufacture paperclips. More importantly, however, it would undergo an intelligence explosion, the hockey stick. It would work to improve its own intelligence, where intelligence is understood in the optimization power, the ability to maximize a reward utility function, in this case, the number of paperclips. So the AGI would quickly realize, oh, collecting paperclips is not the goal, is not really how I achieve my goal. I need to improve my intelligence to help it accumulate more paperclips. And it would continue to improve and enhance, and eventually it would consume the entire world making paperclips.
And then it will go on to make a fake first lady.
Which is why audit and understanding how these, looking at outcomes of AI, is actually really important.
Yeah.
Because we don't understand necessarily how computers are making the decisions or get to their decision. But
eventually we're not. They're going to be black boxes, right?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's why audit and outcomes are important. Yeah. And that we tend to look a lot at intent. So that'll be kind of an interesting way to think about, like, legal issues and regulations and fun stuff like that.
Hey, did any of you get the new Google Calendar yet?
No.
I'm bummed.
No, I didn't either.
Anybody in the chat room? This is a massive update, right? New design. You can book conference rooms, see details.
You know, I was thinking about this. I have this constant problem where I was in Europe last week. I get an appointment. I want to put it in a New York time. On mobile, you can't really find time zone.
Yeah.
And this is because it's a thing built by a global corporation having global meetings. Most of us aren't that way. Most of us just have our own clock that's with us. And wherever I am, I want it at 4 o'clock.
I got
and
the
Google
button.
Doesn't think that way.
I got the button.
What?
There's a button up at lookinyourcalendar.google.com. Use new calendar. A fresh look. Upgrade now.
Oh.
There's a button.
I don't see it. Show me the button.
I don't see my button. I don't have a button.
Upper right-hand corner. No?
No.
Okay, I'm better than you guys. Ha ha. I got more paper clips. Updated design makes it even easier for you to manage your time. You can change. Information density is responsive to your screen or compact. Color set, modern or classic. Okay, I'm going to go with the defaults. That's nice. It's pretty. Should I make a new appointment? Let's make a new appointment. I can't even figure out how. Oh, there it is. I hate it when they do that red plus in the lower right-hand corner. This looks similar. I don't know if it's that different. Find a time. Oh, look, it just finds a time in my calendar, knowing what I've got to do.
You can compare multiple calendars and stuff like that.
Yep. Cool. Meetings. Yeah, it's really designed around Google, isn't it? I mean, I don't have conference room. I don't have to book conference rooms. Do you have to book conference rooms, Stacey?
No. Yes, we like, that's, I'm going to work in the kitchen.
I'm really happy not to have to book conference rooms. So, all right. Yeah, it's very, you know, that's part of the problem. You nailed it. Is the problem with a lot of Google stuff. It's designed for Googlers. Except for the cupcakes. No tiny cupcakes.
Oh, that feels kind of like somebody who liked cupcakes. Thought that would be good.
Googlers love
my
cupcakes.
New jobs.
They're the new donuts. What, Jeff?
My new job. I want to be a personality designer. Ooh. I want to design personalities.
You can design my personality. Help me.
Well, that's the thing. I need somebody to design mine. I'm going to design a personalities. Google has a job description of personality designers. I just kind of love that.
Oh, for your computer? Love that.
For Google Home, the Assistant.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
Somebody has to design that.
They're going to teach you to be like Wall-E.
Job.
Yeah.
This article, when you read it, though, it's basically a group of people who are trying to anticipate what people want from Google Assistant,
yes.
Which sounds like a terrible job in some ways because, you know, the audience is infinite almost. Yes.
You know, I wish they'd design a personality for my refrigerator.
Oh.
What do you want that personality to be? Scolding?
Oh, have to talk about
just
Samsung
get away.
First.
Bixby is... I'm getting Bixby in my Samsung fridge. Right?
So that's not what this is related.
Okay.
So Samsung, they had their developers conference today, and they're putting Bixby in the fridge. And...
Will my fridge have a Bixby button like my phone?
Yeah, it's right next to the smart hub or the family hub giant screen that they've got.
They're not just going to put it in refrigerators. They're going to put it everywhere.
Everywhere. So I added that story because I feel like, and Samsung's falling into this, and a lot of companies fall into this, when we decide to add intelligence to products in the home, we are dumb about it. So first we were like, oh, we're going to add technology and smarts. That means a screen.
Right.
Now we're like, that means a voice assistant.
Right. Very good point. Because that's what we know. So what would you do? You like this barcode reader in a fridge?
So the barcode reader was just like getting it online because that's also a problem. But what I loved about it was this fridge collects like 122 pieces of data and only two of them are actually consumer facing. The rest goes back to Kenmore because they want to be able to fix things when they go wrong and have the right parts. And
that's actually
Is this world changing? Are you going to notice it as a consumer? Only if your fridge breaks and the person comes with the right part. But isn't that awesome?
Yes, because I've had my fridge break. And the problem with the fridge breaking is you lose all your food. And the longer it goes, the worse it gets. And the guy comes and he says, well, I think your compressor died. You know, after tinkering with it, because he didn't know. And then I said, well, do you have one? No. That's not good news.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where I'm like, come on, guys. We don't have to add like a computer to everything. We just have to use computing to make it
smart,
useful, better.
Yeah.
So
I agree with you. No, that's a very good analysis. I don't want to talk to my fridge. On the other hand, if the fridge could by itself read barcodes and know what's in it and help me order, like make a shopping list ahead of time, We're getting there, though. A lot of my recipe programs, if I tell it what I have, will make a recipe. The next step would be for it to know what I have automatically. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to turn. I don't want to turn my house into like a Las Vegas mini bar, where every time you remove something, it goes ching.
Or when you remove it, it goes to your Google Maps and tells you how long you have to walk.
Oh,
yeah.
You know why? That's why we nipped that tiny cupcakes in the bud, because that was the next.
There you go.
I see you just ate a giant Krispy Kreme, Leo. How about we take a walk now? Not gonna open
Start
your car.
Moving.
Not going to open your car.
I'm not going to open the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Hal.
We'll be locked for the next 48 hours.
Dave.
I'm sorry, Dave. Here's a... go ahead.
I was just looking at the comments, and someone was talking about making a grocery list with a voice-activated fridge, which feels like a great idea, but in today's closed ecosystems, it sucks.
I had that Amazon wand.
Yeah.
It's still stuck there on my fridge. I never use it. You know, you scan the barcodes and you can make up a shopping list. Never use it. You know why? I don't eat food with barcodes on it. In fact, that's Leo's new diet. Fewer barcodes. You shouldn't eat foods with... This is easy. Don't eat foods that have barcodes, right? Because those are manufactured. Fresh food don't have barcodes. Pizza doesn't have barcodes. What?
Pizza? I have a frozen pizza that is. Fruit and produce, they've got numbers, not barcodes.
You shouldn't have barcodes on your food. New
that sounds
bill.
So California.
I love this. I know. Yeah, you live in New York, everything's barcoded.
Yeah.
Tom Graves,
Republican.
Want
to see my tattoo?
You have a barcode tattoo?
Oh.
That's a great idea.
Would be.
What number would you put?
So now it would be a whatchamacallit code.
Social Security?
QR no,
code.
Put
a QR code on your cheek.
QR, yeah.
I think that's in preparation for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I, for one, welcome my new masters.
Although, a couple of major security issues. One is the Infineon chip that's used in a lot of devices to generate public keys, public and private keys in crypto, apparently has a major flaw. It's called the Rocca flaw. And many devices that like PIN chips, and the worst thing is your TPM chip in your laptop. This is, these are the Estonian ID cards that I was all excited about. The problem is they're using these Infineon chips, which are crackable, and so your public key is breakable. Estonia's government warned that 750,000 digital IDs, I'm really glad I didn't get one, issued since 2014, are vulnerable to attack because they use this Infineon chip. Many TPM modules and PCs use the Infineon chip. So if you were to put a barcode on your head with your public key, which seems on the face of it to be a very good idea, you might regret it. You'd have to amend it. The Rocca does not affect software-generated PGP keys. For instance, I checked all my PGP keys. They were all generated by OpenGPG and no problem at all. There is a Rocca. We talked about this on Security Now yesterday if you want the high-end details. And there is a site to test whether your keys are flawed. Let's see if I can find that. So I can give you it was down the other day. Yeah, keychest.net/ROCA. So you copy the public key into the clipboard, and it will tell you if there's an issue. It takes X509 certificates, SSH keys, RSA PEM keys, PGP public keys, raw RSA modulus keys, or SMIME keys. Actually, I have an SMIME key I should check in there too. The other vulnerabilities really even scarier, although Steve talked me off the ledge on the crack attack. Key reinstallation attacks, breaking WPA2 by force. Maddie Vanhoef, a security researcher, discovered this attack. I want to be really clear about this. Steve schooled me yesterday on Security Now. This is really an attack not on base stations, but on devices that join base stations. In other words, IoT devices are one of the places that would be vulnerable. Any laptop, vulnerable. Any phone, potentially vulnerable. So that you don't necessarily need a patch for your Wi-Fi access point. Although, if you have a mesh router, a Wi-Fi access point that joins other Wi-Fi access points to share data, then you would want to get an update. Eero is working on an update that's out in beta right now. I imagine all the other mesh routers are doing the same. The real issue is that there are so many IoT devices that will never be updated, plus many Android devices. The estimate is 41% of all Android devices. Ironically, iOS and Windows did improperly implemented the WPA2 protocol and are not vulnerable because they blew it. They didn't do it right. Maybe they knew what they were doing. Nevertheless, Apple is pushing out a fix for that. So God, this was scary news when it came out on Monday. I mean, when I read it, because we have told everybody for years, like 11 years, don't use WEP encryption on your Wi-Fi router. That's broken. But WPA2, especially if you use AES, is really safe. That's what you should use. Everybody should turn it on, protect yourself and your router, and then to wake up Monday morning and find out, oh, actually, it's crackable, is not good news.
You know what? Everything's crackable.
It's hard to do. So, it's not an easy thing to do.
So. It's not, and you have to be
proximate
because it's using the handshake. Yes, you've got to be near. I will give you, just because we've got it, I reached out to a bunch of companies.
Many Linux distros have already been updated. Actually, there was a little bit of a kerfuffle because FreeBSD knew about this months ago and they updated prematurely and everybody was mad because they broke the embargo. But they, I think, said quite credibly, this is a very long period of time we had to wait and we think people are going to be vulnerable, so we're going to fix it now. It was funny that your voice started cracking when you said everything's crackable.
Everything's crackable. Am I less cracky now?
You fixed it.
Yes.
I did.
You're uncracked.
Was this on your show? You did the list of people, companies?
We did. We talked to, so tomorrow morning you can find out, or I can tell you a couple of the big ones here, because, you know, why keep information close to the vest? I don't believe in that. So Nest is rolling out a patch.
Yep.
So all of you guys. Amazon is looking at it to eventually fix it.
All the Echoes will have to be patched. Absolutely.
Yes. And things like your Kindle. Although, you know, I don't know if you really care about that data getting sent. You mentioned Google. So Google Wi-Fi, Google Home, all of that stuff. I did also reach out to June and I haven't heard back yet. So I don't know if my June oven is going to get patched.
How much time? So
someone could find out
what you're cooking.
They'd be like, oh, Stacy, imagine how creepy. I would totally do this to like prank someone, actually. Stand outside your house and get in there and be like, Leo, it looks like your chicken's burning.
I wouldn't mind. I'd say, thank you. Let me go get that.
Like, PSA. All right.
It would be worse if you said, I notice you're cooking cupcakes. You might want to take a walk tonight. That I would. You know,
well, yeah, that would be kind of a jerk move.
Trigger alert.
We should talk about Me Too, I think.
What about you?
No, the hashtag Me Too.
Hashtag Me Too. Okay. I'm not familiar with that. Is that?
Oh, you're not.
Is this the viral?
From Weinstein.
This is the one. I was harassed as well.
Yes, and I woke up in a different time zone and just saw my feed just completely and horrifyingly filled with
people I know and respect. Don't you think that's a good thing?
I think it was a very good thing. It says we all know people.
It just shows you
and you can't hide it.
Yeah, I think it's really important that people step forward. They don't have to say the details, but just say, no, this is ubiquitous.
Some chose to tell horrifying stories and some chose not to.
Just because I called you honey once, please don't use the Me Too on me.
I have my Me Toos, but
everybody
it's not
does.
Because you called me honey.
It's not related to me, I hope. But every woman has a Me Too. And I guess
I imagine there are many men who have them as well.
I've seen men in my feed as well, yes. But I think it was, you know, as at this time when people are blaming everything on social media and blaming everything on Twitter and Facebook.
This is a good thing.
this was a powerful, powerful message
yeah.
that said people you know and love and respect have been affected by this. And it's not something that's just happening in Hollywood. It's not something that's just happening in the White House. It's something that's happening next door to you. And I think that was, I'll be eager to hear Stacey's take, but I think that, it was a powerful way for people to say this is bigger than you know, it's yeah. closer than you know.
And it's not just Hollywood. It's not just the White House. It's everywhere.
Yeah. So that's a guy talking. I don't know, Stacey, if you want to talk about it
maybe
or not.
Maybe we but should it, let Stacey say something.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it. Okay. It's a thing.
Yeah. That's fine. But I think I think it's something that happened this week that I think we would be remiss if we didn't note it on the show. That was it.
But and the reason is, I think we talk so much about all the bad things Twitter does, but that is an example of how Twitter and social media in general can also be a very powerful tool.
A lot of people can use it.
Yeah.
Importantly.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, Twitter enables harassment of women.
By the way, that's Melania. She's just in between collagen injections. Look, that's Melania. No, I swear to God. She's just in between.
I don't think people really think it's not Melania.
Oh, it's just fun to pretend?
I assumed we were all just joking about it, right?
I don't
know. Oh, my God. I don't know if it's real or not.
Conspiracies happen. As I was reading about in a short history of truth.
You might think Pizzagate is pretty absurd as well, right? Oh, they must just have been joking till they come with a gun to investigate. All right, moving on. New bill would allow hacking victims to hack back. This is so horrible. Tom Graves, Republican of Georgia. Kyrsten Sinema, Democrat of Arizona, introduced ACDC. The ACDC Act stands for Active Cyber Defense Certainty Act. That's the best they could do.
An IO for an IO.
Yeah. The idea is it would empower individuals and companies to use new defenses against cyber criminals. If somebody hacks you, you could hack them back. It doesn't allow counterattacks to destroy anything other than their own stolen files. And if you're hacking back, you have to notify the FBI Cyber Investigative Joint Task Force. This is such a bad idea. I assume there's just no way this can become a law, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yep.
Like,
hack them back.
I did see, so you had a story actually in there about, and I hadn't seen this yet, so I was kind of like, oh, fun. This guy running for, is it Senate, who basically wants to let people tell him how to vote, and he's going to vote that way?
This is even stupider.
It's the ultimate democracy.
You know what's
going to
happen? You know what's going to happen? We're going to rename America, America, McAmerica face.
Yes.
Sure. What has ever gone wrong with internet voting?
Exactly.
So, wow. I didn't know about this either. This is good. I think, Carson, you must have found this, or maybe Jeff added it.
No, I didn't.
That's a good story. So, let me find. This is in Motherboard and Vice. Let me find the article.
It's a city council member. That's who it was. So it's municipal. So that's actually kind of fun for like really truly local things. Although I would say citizens don't always understand the impact of their votes.
No, this is things get gamed.
This is so Boulder. Camilo Casas is running for city council in Boulder, Colorado. I know Boulder pretty well. My son went to college there. He has an app called Party.Vote, a liquid democracy platform for participatory municipal governance. Well, maybe you think this
liquid
would work?
Democracy is the buzz phrase out of Iceland, right?
This might work at a local level better, right? I don't know.
I'm kind of like, I've been thinking about it because but then I think about like the big local drama for us. One is a giant zoning fight, and those are always fun. But then there's also, they installed speed humps on a road near me, and holy cow, everyone is very passionate. You know, the people who live on the road are like, yes, speed humps, no one will run over my children. And everyone else who drives on the road is like, screw you all and your children. You have made our commute so much less convenient. So it's kind of
Well,
like, 51, I would like to see those played out and out.
It would take 51% of the votes to change it, right? I don't know if that's, I don't know. I think we should try it. He says he doesn't expect to win. His goal is just to tell people about liquid democracy and to show off this party.vote, which is open source and free. He says later on he'd like to create a political party that will support any candidate as long as they commit to making decisions based on what their citizens want. I think this is the big problem, right? Democracy isn't perfect. Representative democracy seems like a good idea until you get to the Electoral College. Then you go, well, what was that about democracy again? One man, one vote? One person, one vote?
One person, one hack.
One person, one hack. So I really like that Essential phone. I thought it was pretty. I felt bad for Andy Rubin, the creator of Android, that he had so many stumbles, so many problems, couldn't get it out the door. Then they inadvertently spammed people with other people's addresses. And now they're getting sued by Kisa. Misa, you say Kisa, a wireless technology company backed by Nest founder Tony Fadell. Uh-oh. They sued Essential on Monday saying, well, so what happened was we engaged in conversations with Essential in which we divulged to them proprietary technology about our wireless connectivity, a little trick that lets you transfer large files by holding two devices side by side.
Oh, this is the UWB stuff? The 60 gigahertz transfer?
I guess so. Did you ever talk to them?
No, I felt like we talked about this on Essential. Let's see. Okay, keep talking.
All of which is protected under an NDA, non-disclosure agreement. The suit alleges that Kisa deployed a team of 20 top engineers and scientists to educate Essential on its proprietary tech, sending them thousands of confidential emails, hundreds of confidential technical documents, dozens of confidential presentations. After 10 months, Essential said, never mind, we're going to use somebody else's chip. But Kisa's saying they used our techniques in their phone, techniques they gleaned from our relationship despite the confidentiality agreement. One more blow to Essential. But the good news is it's only sold 5,000 phones. So it's actually, you know what? All the reviewers knocked the camera. This is why I hate to do reviews on pre-production stuff. And I'd far prefer to do reviews after a week or two. Essential pushed out a number of updates which fixed the camera. It actually all works really nicely now. It's a beautiful little phone. I wish it had a headphone jack. And I wish they sold more than 5,000 because that means there'll never be any other accessories or, you know, the little connector that they use. I think that's the Kisa Technologies, that connector.
Oh.
Nobody's going to do more of that. I'm not saying that Kisa's right or Essential's right on this, but it's just one more thing. Just piling on. One more problem for Andy Rubin's Essential. Do you think they'll do, Stacey, the home hub that they promised?
They were supposed to talk about it in November, so they might. I mean, if that's his real money,
wow.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. It's bad.
The home is actually ripe for some interesting things, I got to be honest.
Tell me now what everybody's you think. Like, I talked to somebody who does an IoT device. They said it's really hard to work with Apple on HomeKit. And they
oh, my God. Yes, that is so true.
That's what
everybody
says.
Hates Apple.
Yeah, and they far prefer to work with Amazon. Amazon's easy.
Amazon's starting to tighten the screws a little bit, according to the people I talk to, but it's still way, way, way easier. And Apple's difficult because they were trying to create a perfect ecosystem. They took longer. They had some technical difficulties early on. And then now they want to control more of the onboarding and access to the app. So they want to kind of make it so you don't have to have all these apps on your phone, which is awesome for the consumer. But the guys making the stuff are kind of like, I'm sorry, what do I get out of this? Yeah. Just selling a whole bunch of hardware? Because that's not going to work for me. I don't know. I mean, it's a matter
People should listen to Stacey on IoT, or actually subscribe to your newsletter, listen to the IoT podcast, because this is a sector in total flux, and you don't want to invest a lot of money in a dead end. I did buy those new Sylvania bulbs with Zigbee in them.
Zigbee or Bluetooth?
Zigbee.
Okay. Are you going to buy the, or did you order the Amazon Echo Plus, which also has Zigbee and acts as a home hub? Or do you have your own Zigbee hub? Leo's like, I don't know.
Echo Plus, huh? I guess I better get that real soon. So you need a Zigbee hub.
Yes, otherwise your Zigbee lights are not going to work. They will either come with a hub. Now, Sylvania makes a Bluetooth bulb that will work with your phone, and then you don't need a hub.
But I want to be able to control everything with Echo, right? That's really the goal, isn't it?
Well, you can...
So this comes out Halloween, $150 yes. bucks. It's the Echo Silver that we saw on Saturday Night Live. Can I,
exactly.
can I say, Anastasia, turn off the lights.
Alexandria. I will say that mine is coming, and that's right before the show, but I guess you're not going to be there. So I'll be here, and I'll show off.
I'll order it. I'm going to order it right now. It says it'll come Tuesday, October 31st. Yeah.
Yes.
Right before the show. And I'm also getting that new Kindle that day. Halloween's going to be a big day.
Trick or treat.
Trick or treat. Smell my feet. Let's take a break. Come back with picks because I want to wrap this puppy up. And put a ribbon on it. Our show today literally brought to you by Sonic, our internet service provider. We have, this is such a luxury, 10 gigabit fiber to our switch room from Sonic, the world's best, at least America's best internet service provider. It's pretty clear, I think anybody who listens to this show and pays attention, that the internet infrastructure in the United States is a mess. It's a mess. Too many people paying too much for terrible cable internet. Sonic wants to do it right. Now, this is the bad news. They're not available everywhere. In fact, they're really only available in the Northern California area. So I feel really guilty telling you about this, but I use it as a data point. You should know, because it's possible for them to make a very good little business out of delivering you gigabit to your door, fiber to the premise, 15 email accounts, a gigabyte of storage, personal web hosting with a new domain, phone service with unlimited local and long distance calling, fax service. And again, gigabit internet, all for $40 a month. And by the way, no bandwidth caps, friendly and local customer support, and they stand up for your privacy. Green checks across the line from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. This is one of the best ISPs in the country. And it's ours. Sonic.com/twit. Sonic is very big in the wine country, and there have been great pictures from their CEO, Dane Jasper, of the Sonic technicians rewiring all the vineyards, all the homes. Lots of people who suffered horrific loss in the fires, but their internet's coming back fast thanks to Sonic. This is a great company. Join the internet revolution. See if you are eligible. Go to sonic.com/twit and receive your first month of Sonic internet and phone service for free. Plus, bundle it with Dish. You'll save $120 on your Sonic bill. Sure. Sonic.com/twit. Everybody should have internet service this good, and I thank them so much for literally bringing these shows to you on our 10 gigabit symmetric link. Sonic.com/twit. Stacy, what do you got for us?
Okay, I was going to show you. The Amazon Echo has now gives you voice prints, so it will recognize people in your home. And, of course, being me, I tried this out. So I am dismayed to tell you that it doesn't work so well, so we're going to try it.
Oh.
Because sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Alexa, who am I?
I'm not sure who's speaking. But you're in Stacy's account.
Damn it.
Alexa, who am I?
I'm not sure who's speaking. Yep.
So how did you train it? Did you read a bunch of sentences? Because you could always do that, right?
So you can read a bunch. You read 10 sentences, and then other people in your house, they have to log in on their account.
Right.
And they read sentences. It's better at recognizing my husband than I am. It's not better than I am. I can always recognize my husband, but it's better at recognizing my husband as opposed to me. So he's like 9 times out of 10. I am currently batting 400 I bet it's like 4 times out of 10. So there we go. Oh, guys, I'm sorry I set off your echoes.
You know what? I'm really curious is if anybody in chat land, if their echo said, "You are Stacy," because that would be cool.
That would be terrifying.
Oh, you're Stacy. You live in Austin, Texas. You have a husband named Andrew, a dog named Foodles. I forgot what your dog's name is.
That's okay. Foodles is a perfectly acceptable name.
Foodles is a great name that I just invented out of nowhere. And I like it.
Jeff, if someone wants to name their poodle Foodles, go for it.
Jeff Jarvis, give us a number.
Well, I could cheat and say that any poll is a number, and thus, indeed, Sweden has, in fact, officially named a train Trainee McDrainface.
Oh, God!
But I won't do that.
Trainee Mc... Really? That's not his real name. I'm
guessing. They did it. My favorite part of that story, hold on a second. My favorite part of that story is that another leading candidate for the name in the poll was Glenn, because it's this longstanding joke that everyone in Gothenburg is named Glenn.
Glenn's good.
Oh, those Swedes.
But Trainee McTrainface won.
They won, and they're doing it.
The Swedes.
Unlike Bodie McVoteface, which never really sailed.
No.
This is but anyway,
it's a train.
I digress.
It looks like Trainee McTrainface, actually.
It does. So for a real number, Piper Jaffray put out its semi-annual Taking Stock with Teens research and said that teenagers in the survey, 47% of them prefer Snapchat as their favorite place to be.
I thought that was really
24%,
interesting.
24%. Yeah, 24%. Instagram, 9% Facebook, and 7% Twitter. Now we keep hearing
by the way,
all these
growth,
people, they're not using Facebook.
That's a big growth for Snapchat. So we'd heard that everybody's leaving Snapchat, but not the teens. It was from 39% to 47% since the last poll. So that I thought that was really interesting. And in fact, if I were Snapchat, I'd rather get younger people. Who cares? Let Instagram have all us old fogies. Exactly.
Yeah, I was talking
to a
media
executive. The brands are on Instagram.
Yes.
I look at Snapchat. I see plenty of advertising on Snapchat. I mean, they must be advertising, right?
Where is YouTube in all this? I know it's not a traditional social network, but that's tweens,
that's a
I guess.
Good question.
I was like, as a tween, my daughter is just, good Lord.
YouTube I think YouTube owns home. Everybody under 20. Tweens and teens. But I'll use my son, 22, as an example. Snapchat and YouTube are equal because they're different services. Snapchat's how he communicates. When he sits down to watch TV, even if he's in the living room, it's YouTube.
Yeah. Well, I guess my daughter doesn't have a phone yet. So all of her friends communicate via Google school accounts. So they're on Hangouts.
I guarantee you, watch out because Snapchat's coming. How could you not?
By the way, since we're talking about YouTube, let's give a plug to our friend John Green, whose novel, Turtles All the Way Down, just came out and got a spectacular review in the New York Times.
Oh, nice.
And I bought the audio version because it's an excellent, by all accounts, an excellent account of OCD and what it's like to have the thoughts that go on because John himself is stricken with this, and that's what inspired this book. So. A YouTube friend of all of ours.
Is he?
Has a new book out.
How does this relate to YouTube?
Is he my YouTube friend?
Oh, well, he and his brother, Hank, they run VidCon.
Oh, yeah.
They do incredible educational videos. Oh. They do Vlog Brothers.
As soon as you say Hank, I know that. Oh, now the Greens. Yeah.
The Greens. Yeah.
Yeah.
John and Hank Green.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. As long as we're talking books, did you note that George Saunders won the Booker Prize, the Man Booker Prize, for one of my favorite books, Lincoln and the Bardo? Man, if you haven't listened, it's the best audio book ever. The Audible version of it has so many, Nick Offerman and so many people reading it, and it's just, I could listen to it again and again and again. If you haven't read it yet.
Did you get the new Le Carré?
Not yet.
You talked about last week?
Yes, but that is on my list. Yeah, I get two credits in a week. On the 22nd, and then I will get it. Hey, my pick is the Google Advanced Protection Program. It is now officially available to all. This is, but not all will want it. It's, we all know there's a big trade-off between security and convenience. And if you're willing to give up a lot of convenience, John Podesta, I'm looking at you. This is really strong security. Locks you down. You can only log into your Google account with your login password and a physical security key. And you have to have two because you have one that does Bluetooth LE. I've ordered them. I have a YubiKey, which does the USB authentication, and then you need a Bluetooth LE one for iOS devices. So I've ordered that. That comes tomorrow.
But this isn't one of the ones with the hacked RSA chips, right?
No. Well, you won't. Yeah, you know, the key is do not generate the public key on the YubiKey. But the good news is you don't. This is Google does all that externally, and it's not using public key crypto anyway. It's using FIDO UTF for the authentication. It also does other things. For instance, it will turn off a lot of apps that use your Gmail. So it may prove to be inconvenient. I may, for instance, find out that I can no longer access Gmail with the programs. Or actually, what I do is I get my Gmail to another service. I may not be able to do that. Third-party apps that want access to Gmail or Drive will no longer have permission.
Which I get.
Yeah. Oh, this makes it secure. This, if the DNC had used this, it would be secure, right? You'll only be able to use the Chrome browser to access Gmail or photos. You can't use another browser, at least for now, although it's conceivable they could add extensions for other browsers.
You can use the, can you use the Inbox app?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you can use the Inbox app, but you, okay, but, for instance, Apple Mail won't work. Contacts Calendar won't work. You'll have to use Gmail, Inbox, yes, or Google Calendar apps on iOS. So this is quite a sacrifice. On the other hand, this is ultimate security. It goes well beyond traditional two-step verification. You need to sign into your account with a password and a physical key. In fact, no other way will work anymore. So you can't say, oh, I don't have my key. I lost my key. Can I use Authenticator? No. Can I use SMS? No. And if you do lose your key and you need to get into your account, it's a much more stringent a system of getting you back in, because that's, of course, always been a weakness, somebody pretending to be you. And it takes a while. I think it takes a week to get your account back to slow it all down. Well, this is not something everybody will want to do. You probably won't want to do it. But if you are Jennifer Lawrence, if you are John Podesta, if you're a celebrity or a journalist, if you're
Glenn Greenwald. You have to. A week is too long. They have to have some sort of rapid response team that can authenticate people quickly.
Well, I'm going to do it, and I will let you know. I don't know how long you're going to stay on.
Maybe you should create an email account that you don't
like. I remember when Jason, on this show, Jason cut himself off from his own email.
Right.
Yeah, it was a great sacrifice for the show.
I don't think, now, we had heard maybe there was a charge for this. I don't think there is a charge. But I don't know yet because I can't go farther until I have my keys. So you have to have two keys. You have to have a USB key and a Bluetooth key. I had the USB key, but I ordered a Bluetooth key. The one they recommend is out of stock. They recommend one called the Phaeton Multipass FIDO security key. I ended up getting one from Wasco that does the same thing. It's, as long as it's FIDO UTF Bluetooth LE, that's fine. I'll have a report for you, maybe not. Yeah, next week. I should have it all set up by next week. But it is available now. It's just launched this week. If you're interested in advanced account protection from Google, you need merely go to... what was it? No, I was there and I just left the page foolishly. landing.google.com/advanced-protection. Friends, we're out of time for this...
We were there at least an hour ago. Well, that never bothers us.
No.
Stacey's starving.
No, she snacked. She said she snacked.
I am hungry now, though. I'm burning through all that brain work I'm doing here.
Oh, you're doing good brain work. Stacey is at stacyoniot.com. That's her newsletter. Subscribe. It's free. It's great. I read it every week. At GigaStacey on Twitter. And, of course, she and Kevin Toefel do a great IoT podcast. You can also get that at stacyoniot.com or iotpodcast.com. Thank you, Stacey. Great to see you.
I'm glad to be here.
Hashtag me too. Also, thanks to Mr. Jeffrey Jarvis, who's in town.
I'm reading about truth.
Mr. Truth. He's post-truth. Buzzmachine.com. I bet you he'll be writing about truth. At Jeff Jarvis on the Twitter. And, of course, he's a professor of journalism at CUNY. So if you want to be one of the news journalistic superstars, that's the place to go.
And so I was in London in front of the BBC headquarters and for a meeting on Monday. And a guy just comes up, takes off his headphones and says, Professor Jarvis? I said,
wow.
Somebody at the BBC. And he said, Twig!
Oh, nice.
Guy on the street out of nowhere. I think his name was Charles, as I remember. Very nice. Shook hands. Go inside. Sit in a meeting next to an executive from a big PR company. He says, I love Twig.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good job, Jeff.
Hey, everybody in London.
Cool. No.
We love you, too.
Yeah.
So. Well, you won't see you next week, Jeff.
Afraid not.
You won't see me next week either.
Won't see. So it'll just be me doing the show.
It's just you.
That's what the world wants anyway. We just
ironically, I'll be in
show.
San Jose.
No, you can't come up.
Well, I'm giving a speech for Arm Tech Con.
Nice.
So
have fun.
Sorry,
Armed Tech Con.
My kind
no,
of tech.
Arm Tech Con.
Oh, I thought it was okay.
Embedded chips.
I thought Stacey's armed.
So you know what? We'll get Matthew Ingram to talk about his new job at the Columbia Journalism Review. And who else? We'll get somebody else. Kevin Marks. We have lots of people who want to be on this show. Maybe Danny Sullivan to tell us about his new job at Google. See, you'll be sorry.
I want to be there for that.
Yeah, that already sounds way better. Although, too much testosterone. Yeah, I'm going to give you a hard time. That Me Too crack. I was like, Lee.
I'm sorry. I have to do that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be a privileged white male.
Do you, Leo?
No, but I can't help it. It's just a flaw. I have a flawed person. I'm sorry, I am. I'm a flawed person. We do this show every Wednesday. Whether or not those other guys are here, I'll be here next Wednesday at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can watch live. Join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. You can also get on-demand versions, audio and video, at our website, twit.tv/twig, or subscribe in your favorite podcatcher. We would love it if you did. That way you'll get it each and every week. The dog is signaling it's time to say goodbye, Stacey. Goodbye, Stacey. We'll see you next time on Twitter.